Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, how are you? Monday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK, stevejonesshow.com on Facebook, on Twitter. Give us a Twitter follow at Steve Jones PSU. And our shows are available too as a podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on both Apple Podcast App, iTunes, and Google Play. And Sean Carey here, Steve in the Sunbury Motors Studio. In just a few, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia. On the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Monday edition of our Steve Jones Show, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury. Now, have you done your spring cleaning? I'm not talking about cleaning around the house, talking about your insurance policies. Do you have the right coverage when life happens? Nice time of year to look into your policies, make sure that you have what you need. And the great thing with the terrific folks at Purdy Insurance, they work with the brands that you know and trust. And they go to bat for you like it happened to them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. You can also visit them at purdyinsurance.com. Visiting us today on the show, looking forward to chatting with Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart's. Tony's scheduled to join us at 3:35, right out of the gate here this hour, 3:35. Tony Barnhart live on WKOK. We're with you live till 5, and then Late Day News Roundup. Matt Catrillo at the anchor desk this afternoon. CBS Sports Radio tonight here on WKOK. Since the Phillies are off till tomorrow, they'll start a 3-game series in Chicago tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and Thursday afternoon here on WKOK. Phillies got swept over the weekend. San Francisco, they've only scored one run in the last 29 innings. That a home run yesterday by pitcher Jake Arrieta. So the bats have been silent. San Francisco, Derek Rodriguez, a 6-inning gem yesterday. Yes, the son of Pudge Rodriguez. Joe Panic, Buster Posey hitting back-to-back RBI singles in the sixth, and Andrew McCutchen following with a 3-run homer. So it was a big 5-run sixth inning for the Giants yesterday to lock up the 3-game sweep over the Phillies. So next up will be 2 night games in Chicago, and then a Thursday afternoon matinee here on WKOK. NBA Finals last night, Steph Curry looked pretty incredible, hit 9 three-point shots to set an NBA record, NBA Finals record, once held by Ray Allen, that was set earlier this decade from the Miami Heat. Steph ended up with 33 points to lead Golden State to a 122-103 victory over the Cavs, lead the series 2-0. Kevin Durant also very steady, 26 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Klay Thompson added 20 points despite having 3 fouls early on in the game. LeBron James followed up his 51-point performance in Game 1 with 29 points, 13 assists, and 9 rebounds last night. Next 2 games will be in Cleveland, Game 3 Wednesday night. Kevin Love had 22 last night and 10 boards for the Cavs, just looking to try to get some kind of momentum in this series. Going to be tough. The 2-time MVP, Steph Curry, made 11 of 26 shots, 9 of 17 from 3-point range. James became irate at the officials for a no-call on Curry at one point in the third quarter. That's when that's when Golden State really sets the court on fire, third quarter. So they'll move to Cleveland to see if they can at least grab one game and turn it into a series. We'll have to wait and see. And other sports headlines to tell you about today. Serena Williams has pulled out of the French Open, and she has a pectoral injury. She was supposed to play Maria Sharapova in the fourth round. Williams said at a press conference that Roland Garros, extremely disappointing, but I also made a promise to myself and to my coach and my team that if I'm not at least 60% or 50%, then I probably shouldn't play. Serena has won 23 Grand Slam titles. Problem is a right pec muscle. And she said, the fact I physically can't serve at all, a good indication that I maybe should just go back to the drawing board and stay positive, try to get better, and not let it get to a point where it could be a lot worse.
Well, that's okay, because, you know what? Maybe we can avoid another embarrassing press conference moment. You know how many embarrassing press conference moments there have been in the past week? Now, let's start with Serena Williams. Now, Serena, now, this has nothing to do with the... It has zero to do with the objects, Sean, of the press conference. So this really has nothing to do with Serena Williams, Steve Kerr, LeBron James, Tristan Thompson. It has to do with the people asking the questions. Now, obviously, today we're going to have one of the best in the business on it, Tony Barnhart, right? Okay. Serena Williams was asked by a writer from Inside Tennis about whether she was intimidated by the model good looks of Maria Sharapova. What? Huh? I was asked in a press conference. Are you kidding me? Okay. Then there's the Tristan Thompson one last night, whether he feels helpless guarding Steph Curry. I mean, you're asking a professional athlete who has tremendous confidence in their own ability whether they feel helpless. And of course he gets upset. Says a couple things, a couple of expletives, then they say one more question, he goes, no more questions, and he leaves. If you're going to ask him about that, okay, you ask him about, okay, Steph Curry, when, you know, obviously had a big night. There's so many times that you switched off of him. What do you have to keep in mind guarding him on a switch that maybe you don't have to with somebody else? Because how many times have I told you I think Curry's the best in the NBA at layups? See, to me, that's what makes him so difficult. His ability to drive, and he's so good at layups. He uses his body, his angles really, really well. Helpless? Do you feel helpless? What? Then there's Mark Schwartz. Mark Schwartz has not exactly distinguished himself in this NBA Finals to the point where, like, Mark, we don't want you out of the mic anymore. He asked Steve Kerr last night whether it's demoralizing for the opponent. How demoralizing can it be when Steph Curry's hitting all those threes? And Steve Kerr says, I don't know. I coach. He's on my team. So we're not demoralized at all. Why are you asking him that question? Why? You expect to be bailed out with an answer? And then, of course, there was the LeBron stuff where he kept asking him over and over again about the state of mind of J.R. Smith. LeBron finally had enough, put the mic down, and walked out. How the heck does... I mean... For example, how am I supposed to know what Sean's state of mind happens to be at this particular moment? By the way, today's Deb's birthday, by the way, isn't it?
It is.
Happy birthday, Deb.
You remembered.
Happy birthday, Deb. One of the real greats out there.
She took the day off. She's just maxing, relaxing at home.
She should. She deserves that.
That's right.
Deb works hard. She's had a really tough year where she's bounced back beautifully. And she deserves to have a Deb day. So, Deb, happy birthday from us to you. But, I mean, how are you supposed to know the state of mind of, like, his teammate? What's the state of mind? I'm like, I don't know. I know what mine was. You want to ask me? I'll tell you what I was thinking. I mean, what are we doing at these things? I don't get it. It doesn't serve. If you're supposed to be a conduit and a liaison between the fan and the player and coach, right, what does that serve? If a guy tells you, what was his state of mind? Did you talk to him about it? No, I didn't talk to him about it, so I don't know what he was thinking. Next question. How many more questions do you need to ask?
In the media pool last night, there was a style writer. I don't know if this person was representing a paper from Oakland or San Francisco or Los Angeles, and he had to ask Draymond Green who came up with the suit that he wore into the arena last night.
Mm.
He had a jacket, like a light blue sport jacket on. He had matching shorts,
right,
instead of wearing slacks. And he had to ask, oh, who designed that for you? And it's like, this isn't the red carpet. It's like, come on. You can ask that when they hand out the NBA awards or go, ask that at the ESPYs or...
I don't know where we're going. Where are we going with this?
It reminded
stuff?
Me of the non-sports writers that show up on Super Bowl Media Day.
Well, there are enough of them showing up on regular media days. I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, what am I watching here? What's going on here? Wait, Mark Schwartz going... Now, Mark Schwartz has been around the block forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. He's asked some decent questions over the years or whatever. But now the last couple of days, whatever, I don't know if he wants to get his name out there, whatever. I have no idea. But you sit there and go, what are you doing? I don't get it. I don't know. But that's for his organization to deal with. If they think it's good questions and it makes them look good, I can assure you in no uncertain terms, it's not making them look good.
I'll throw LeBron a mulligan for walking away from the table after game one. I mean, that left me with the impression that he was defending his teammate, even though his teammate made a really major gaffe before it went into overtime.
I have zero, zero issue with LeBron walking out on that. None. What are you supposed to just sit there the entire time and just like answer questions that you have no answers for? What? If I phrase it differently, you'll answer it. If I phrase it this way, you'll answer it. If I phrase it that way, you'll answer it. Because you and I both in those press conferences, you're like, oh, where it gets phrased like four different ways, and you sit there and go, what are you looking for here? I mean, stop wasting everyone's time. You're wasting our time. Seriously, it's a waste of time to do something like that. I'm going to ask it four or five different ways. Hey, okay, J.R. Smith's down the hall. Why don't you get up, walk down there, and you ask him? Why does LeBron James have to answer for J.R. Smith? Why? And finally, you just like, Seth, I looked. My thought was, "Hey, I don't blame you one bit. I don't blame you one bit for doing that." Same thing with Tristan Thompson. I mean, I don't blame him for leaving either. I mean, look, losing's hard. Losing's really hard. Look, winning's hard. And these guys get up there and they're about as forthright as they possibly can be when it comes to this stuff, because they've got to sit up there as part of the obligation, and they have to answer the questions. Okay, not easy. Not easy at all. And I think I'll ask this question 27 different ways. After a while, you're looking around saying, okay. And not only that, but why didn't the NBA, their media people, step in and say, okay, next question, please? Did they think that was a good look for the league? I know I didn't. I think it was didn't think it was a good look for the league at all.
Well, hey, it's just the media availability that LeBron gives anyway. I mean, before each game, after each game, the day before, right. the day before the next game. Sometimes he'll speak after a shoot around. I mean, it's just
right. Maybe. No, he gives. Look, and I don't blame him for walking out because after a while, you're like, look, do I have to sit here and answer all these stupid questions? Like, how many times have I said on this show? 25% of the questions at a press conference are really good questions. In fact, let's go 15. 15% of all questions asked at press conferences are really good questions. They're phrased as a question. There's some insight to it where they're looking for a what and a why. So about 15%. All right. 60% of questions asked at press conferences are questions that have to be asked. It doesn't really matter if it's a great or awesome question, but it's a question that has to be asked. Okay? So now we're up to 75%. The other 25% of questions asked at press conferences are just so stupid, they're wasting everybody's time. They're wasting everybody's time over and over and over again. 15%, great questions. 60%, necessary questions. 25%, why they give you the mic. I don't know. And sometimes you swear some of these questions are asked so the person can hear themselves asking it. All right, we'll take a break. It's Deb's Birthday Bash 2018. Now she's mad at me. Don't you do that, Steve? Come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Here's Adam Purdy with another example of how Purdy Insurance is different.
I was at home one Saturday when I got a call from a client who had just been in an auto accident with a rental car in Canada. After confirming that everyone was okay, I checked his policy and assured him that we had the proper coverages in place. Within a few minutes, I had his claim called in and he was back to enjoying his vacation.
Purdy Insurance has been answering calls like this for over 90 years.
Give Purdy Insurance a call today at 800-677-2478 to see what we can do for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, this has been a bad time for the Phillies. They've hit 205 in their last 16 games. I mean, 205 is a team. And not only that, they are not, I mean, they're swinging so early in the count. There was a stretch of games, I think it's the last two series combined, where they've only had four hitters reach a three-ball count. Total. I mean, that's wow. You can't generate anything. They've got to try to be a little more patient at the plate because it's not just hitting 205. If you're not generating deep counts, that means you can't even walk, which means your on base percentage is bad. Fortunately for this state, the Pirates are lighting it up. I thought the hit they got in the ninth inning last night was tremendous. Broke up the no-hitter. It's big. Tony Barnhart, one of the best in the business, next. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. There are certain people in a profession that set themselves apart from others, and over the years, our next guest has done exactly that. He's with SEC Network now and TMGSports.com. That is Tony Barnhart. Tony, welcome, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. That's very kind of you to say that. Obviously, I followed your career these many, many years, and anybody who's done 200 or more games at a place like Penn State is worth noting, so congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you, Tony. Very nice of you to say. The transfer rule, the SEC just went through a series of meetings. And, of course, Nick Saban is going to be a focal point of, you know, when it comes time for people to talk, and he always has opinions on how it works out. Discuss the transfer rule and how the SEC eventually changed it.
Well, you know, Steve, everybody understands that the graduate transfer rule was basically put into place. If you get your undergraduate degree and you still got eligibility left, you can transfer just about any place you want to and become immediately eligible. Well, the SEC coaches and administrators put a wrinkle into that, and they said, look, if you're going to transfer within the conference, from one conference school to another, we're going to still make you do a one-year residency requirement. And then they'd been, you know, a couple of guys that had come up who wanted to transfer, and one was a defensive back by the name of Maurice Smith, who wanted to transfer from Alabama to Georgia, and it took a while, and finally he did get a waiver from the SEC, but the bottom line was everybody understood that we're sort of in a new age now of college athletics where you're trying, if you can, to give the athletes more freedom. So ultimately, after much discussion last Friday, the presidents of the SEC voted to do away with that residency requirement, and now, if you graduate and you have eligibility left, you can go to another SEC school without sitting out. But that was the change.
In an odd way, isn't this something that actually can benefit Nick Saban?
Oh, there's no doubt. See, that's the amazing thing, Steve, or the funny thing about it is, you know, Nick Saban was being set up as this guy who was against it, when, as a matter of fact, he's going to benefit from it more than anybody else. His position, when we got there last Tuesday in Destin for the meetings, he said, look, I don't know why I'm getting beat up for this. All I'm doing is following the rules. Either we have a rule or we don't have a rule. We have a rule and we enforce the rule, then I shouldn't be getting beat up. And what I wrote at the time was, he's right about this, and they should do away with the rule. But yeah, if a guy is looking to play his last year and maybe not particularly happy with the way things are going at his school in the SEC, Alabama's a place he might want to go. So ultimately, you're right. I think Nick Saban will benefit from this change more than anybody.
Yeah, you and I both know it's not like college basketball. College basketball right now has about 700 to 850 transfers per year. Mm-hmm. Some of them are grad transfers. Some are just straight transfers. Is there a concern on the part of some coaches that they're trying to avoid potentially the Wild West?
Well, obviously coaches are the ones who are not crazy about it, who think it's going to be out of control. I don't think it will be. I think that's overstated. Now, I will say this. There are certainly more graduate transfers now than there were 5 years ago. when it was just one or two guys who were doing this. Now guys are going into school. You know, if you go to summer school, you can get out in three and a half years. And so I just don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. There'll be some high profile players who will leave, but on the balance, I don't think it's that big a deal.
Tony, the Rice Commission just put out its recommendations, which you and I both know the NCAA will adopt. I went on the college basketball side. If I were to sit you down in a chair and say, hey, look, let's look at college football. You've been around the block. You know how it works. What would be a couple of recommendations you would like to make to a committee right away about college football and maybe some changes it needs?
Well, I think one of the things that we're going to have to face eventually is that the players are going to have to be compensated for their names and images and likenesses. We're not in a situation right now where, you know, they've done the full cost of attendance stipend, which, you know, gives guys about, I don't know, between $4,000 to $6,000. And now really the only thing that remains, I think, is to give them a chance to benefit from their name, images, and likenesses, because you're not going to be able to pay the players. That simply is not going to happen. I think the other thing is we need to continue to make the changes necessary when it comes to the safety of the game. I think we're at a crucial point right now where we've got to listen to the experts. We've got to do everything we can to make the game as safe as we possibly can, because I've talked to a number of commissioners who say, you know, there's going to be a big lawsuit over this someday, and we better be able to go into a court of law and say that we have done every single thing we can to make the game as safe as possible. It's just like the new kickoff rule where you can
right.
take a knee inside the 25-yard line and get the ball at the 25. That's all about the safety of the game.
And you know how I looked at that, Tony, is that, you know, if you can fair catch it, you and I both know, you put a guy back. Saquon Barkley was back for Penn State last year. You really think he was going to fair catch the ball?
Not a chance.
Yeah, exactly right. Not a chance. To me, that was just a step to keep it in there, but I'm wondering if it's the first step toward eliminating it. What do you think?
I think we'll eventually eliminate kickoff. I don't know that you and I will still be around when they do it, but this right. was something they could do short of eliminating the kickoff, because that way you can still have the onside kick and it's still a part of the game. But what you don't want is one team that's vastly superior to another from an athlete standpoint, and a young man catches the ball at three and he's got to run it, okay?
Right.
And maybe
right.
he doesn't want to run it, maybe his coach doesn't want him to run it. So what that does is that it's going to increase the number of touchbacks, which is the objective to begin with, but still it gives the Saquon Barkleys of the world a chance to make a play.
You were talking about compensating athletes for their likeness, image, and so forth, which would be anything from the EA Sports game to a commercial for a car dealership, for example. In reality, outside the EA Sports game, where obviously every image is in there, I mean, how many players really would benefit from that overall, but at least have the option of having the benefits so the university doesn't have to pay them?
Very, very few players. Very few players from a free market standpoint are going to get that kind of money. But the idea is, again, the idea is to give the players more freedom. Okay, what I wrote last week, I said you can't give them more money, but you can give them more freedom. And college athletics has got to find a way to do that. And again, you're only talking about a handful of people. And certainly, you know, some of the outstanding female athletes, volleyball players, golfers, they'll get some opportunities. But at least it puts it back into the free market as opposed to an NCAA policy.
Completely agree with that. And the next part is, what about the ability to have, okay, let's use semantics here. Instead of an agent, we call them advisors. Hockey players
right.
and baseball players have advisors. Should college football and basketball players be allowed that same opportunity?
Absolutely. And they should, and the hope is if you bring the whole agent thing out of the shadows, and there have been efforts to try to do that to a certain extent, because a lot of coaches will let players meet with agents. And that idea is hopefully you get fewer players making bad decisions. You know, whatever the number was this year of juniors that came out and simply did not get drafted. that to me is something that's something we need to come up with. Even, you know, maybe finding a way for them to come back. You know, how do you do that and take care of all your scholarships? But that's something I think we've got to address.
Next part is this. You and I both know there are several players that went into the NFL draft, and we're about to see this in the NBA draft too, where they're not going to get picked.
Yep.
Should they be given the option of going back to school? And how complicated does that become with rosters that right now are set at 85?
Well, and that's the thing. It's all about the numbers. You know, if you're Nick Saban, you're Alabama, you know you've got to sign, you know, 21, 22 players to get the numbers that you want. And I still think it can be done simply because you're not going to hold 10 spots. We know that, okay?
Right.
But you could hold three, okay? Maybe you put a limit on the number of spots you can hold open for guys who could come back. But to me, I know it's about the numbers, but we've got to find a way to help these young men. I just think about some of the young men who went out and just simply did not get drafted. What's next for them? They could come, if they could come back and play again, maybe get closer to their degree, I think life would be a lot better for them. And I just got to believe there's a lot of smart people in college athletics, and we can find a way to accommodate these guys.
I completely agree with that. LSU's number one in this grouping since 2013. I think 32 or 33 LSU players have come out. Not all of them, Tony, have been drafted. And again,
nope.
That puts them into no man's land.
Yeah, but where are you going to go? You know, you could go back to school and get your degree, maybe. But the problem is your playing days are over. And if you had come back, you know, the thing that drives me absolutely crazy, who's guys who come out and basically the NFL gets potentially first round material for second round money, second and third round money.
Right.
And if you could find a way to make it, give these guys, make more sense to stay in the school and, you know, get insurance, come back and try to go from being a third round pick to maybe a second round pick or even a low first round pick, to me that is time well invested.
Something that I'm in favor of is that it's at some point in January, and that would be before the late signing period, if you wanted to clear for the draft, I'd like to see an underclassman combine to maybe get them even better advice as to what to do and not do. What do you think of that idea, Tony?
I've heard that talk, and I really like that idea. Simply because that way they have a chance to hear from the pro scouts. I mean, the problem is, you know, the NFL has a system now. They tell you you're going to be a first-round pick or second-round pick or other, all right?
Right?
And if you're an other, you shouldn't go out. But the kids won't listen. You know, they're listening to other people. They're listening to agents. They're listening to family members who want the money and they want it now. And so, to me, if they had either a junior combine or an undergrad combine, then the NFL scouts, and I do a lot of pro days, and I know these guys, the scouts in the NFL are really sharp, and they would tell them right up, son, you are not ready. I'm telling you. And that comes directly from the club, and I think it would benefit them greatly.
Tony, on a personal note, what was it many, many years ago that said, you know what, I really want to do this, and how much have you been helped over the years by the fact that you have what I call a curious mind? You want to always know more about something.
You know, when I started college, I thought I was going to be a high school football coach. That was my plan. I was a player. I wasn't very good. I was small, but I compensated by being exceedingly slow. But I was gonna be a high school teacher and a coach. And then I had a change of heart. I saw what the salary chart was for first year high school teachers in the state of Georgia, and of course I entered the profession that one profession that pays less as a sports writer.
Yes.
I fell in love with the sport early on. When I was a young boy, I was really a Yankees fan more than anything else, but I went to my first college football game when I was about 13 and just thought it was the neatest thing in the world. So I decided I would give writing a shot and got a job at a small newspaper in South Carolina. I graduated on June 10th from the University of Georgia, and then went to work at the Union Daily Times on June 11th, and been drawing a paycheck ever since. And it's like my wife said, she said, you know, it's not like you got a real job or anything like that. So just, you're just having fun. You're talking about playing ball.
Well, I believe it. My wife says the same thing to me. And I'll say to her when I leave for the stadium on Saturday morning, I'll say, well, it's off to the mine. Just to make her think in some way I'm actually working. What has it taken to... It's one thing to be a sports writer, be out there, you write, you're on deadline, you write your column and so forth. What has it taken for you to adapt now to the multimedia world that we have now?
Well, it became pretty early on, right around 84, 85, when I came to Atlanta, to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that the future was going to be for those who had multiple sets of skills, who could do a lot of different things, who didn't rely on one thing. And that's when I started getting into radio and television, and I got a big break in 97 when this is early in the days of ESPN's College Game Day, and they said, we need a reporter to with the guys, and so they hired me as a reporter, and I was still doing my job with the AJC, but that gave me incredible exposure on the television, and that turned into about an 8-year stint with CBS, and then the SEC Network came along, and that was something I couldn't turn down. But it's and I tell this to journalism students when I speak to them, I said, man, you got to use all the sets of muscles you've got creatively. You got to be able to write, you got to be able to speak, you need to be able to do stuff on television. And I think the future is for the multi-purpose folks.
Totally agree. Tony, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate and respect your work tremendously.
All right, Steve. Good luck.
Tony Barnhart joining us from TMGCollegeSports.com and the SEC Network. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I thought I was going to need Purdy Insurance twice in the last 24 hours, for goodness sakes. Okay, now this happened driving here, right? Which is not the worst one, by the way. I'm coming down and there's a car in the right-hand lane. Stops from the right-hand lane, and there's two lanes, and then makes a left turn in front of me. Now, I had to stop anyway, so it wasn't that bad. But I looked over and went, oh, that's okay, that's interesting. Here's the worst one. Now, you know my street, Sean. You've been to my street how many times?
Oh, man, hundreds of times.
All right.
We normally would cut through Lamont and head over to Atherton, do some shopping. Sure.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. You've been here to the studio how many times, so you know my street and the whole thing. At the end of it, it's a cul-de-sac. So how many houses do we have in the street? A dozen?
Right.
Right. So yesterday, Kathy and I are pulling up, right? And I'm going down the street, and now I go slow down, and I go to make a left turn into my driveway. Okay, a left turn into my driveway. And this kid passed me on the left, flies by me in his car.
Wow, that's not really a huge street.
Yeah, but he passed me on the left. Okay, we're going the same direction.
Yeah, parallel.
Yeah, I'm making a left turn into my drive. I had to slam the brakes on because I was going to hit him.
So you had already started to make the turn into the driveway.
Yeah, but it's only a two-lane road.
I know.
Okay, so he's supposed to be behind me.
Now, how fast was he going? Did he have to swerve to the left? Did he kiss the curb on his left side? He just kept going?
No, he kept going. He was going about 35. Are you kidding me? I'm making a left turn into my driveway. Now, this isn't a car coming at me because I wouldn't have made the turn. This is a car behind me that should still be in the right-hand lane behind me. And he passed me.
And 9 chances out of 10 going up the hill to your house, there's normally not a car behind you, right?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, I know that. I'm not giving him a pass. I'm just saying, Norton.
I had to stop to make the turn to go into my driveway, and I slammed the brakes on. If I didn't, I'd have hit him. I'd have smacked him. He would have. One of two things would have happened. He would have hit me in the passenger door, right? Which would have done a number on me.
Yeah.
Or I would have hit him, and he would have veered off and hit the tree. Like, what are you doing? I just sat there and went, I said, this is amazing. So,
now once you got in the driveway, did you kind of sit in the seat after you turned the car off for an extra minute to kind of catch your breath and compose?
No, I went down the street. I had three options. I could do nothing. I could talk to his father and explain to him what happened. Or I could call the police. Because, I mean, I could call the police. I mean, he clearly broke the law. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay. And so I opted for, I don't want him to get in trouble with the police. I do not want him to get points on his license. I do not want him to get a ticket. None of that. I don't want that. That's, you know, he's a young kid. But I figured by at least telling his father, he could at least reiterate to him, hey, look, be careful, okay? So that's the option I went for. And I said, hey, and I hit him on the shoulder. I said, I know, he's a kid, I get it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.